Today in this episode, we're going to speak to several ACC staff members about the Innovative Initiative Grants that were recently awarded by the ACC Foundation. This is the second episode in a two-part series regarding the grants. Math Chair Charles Kilgore was awarded a $1,200 grant to help purchase new software for the department. Okay, so tell me a little bit about this software.
So the exciting thing about Nearpod is it's going to allow us as faculty members to have better collaboration with the students in our online environments. It's going to allow the student to be part of the class on almost in a live setting without it actually being a live setting. So with this is the ease of use, which I think as faculty members is the big thing. We want to make sure that whatever we implement in the classroom is easy to use. Mm-hmm. And for the students, it's actually easy to use as well. It'll work on any computer, tablet, phone device. The student has access wherever they are and can participate as they need to.
So how is this different from like other platforms that we've used before?
How is this different than, say, Blackboard? So in Blackboard, what we do is we set up our course, we have our course shell, and then students walk through the modules piece by piece. So I'll have a video uploaded, and then they can see the video, and then I'll have a assignment or a reading or something, and it's all separate. But with Nearpod, what I want to be able to do is to put all that together in one, we'll call it a file, but basically it's a lesson. So the first part of the lesson will be the video. Then as after they watch that video, then I have a check-in question or, you know, whatever it may be. There's some gamification in there that we can implement.
Yeah.
But say there's a video, there's a follow-up question, there's other resources that I have attached, and the student accesses that all in one place instead of having to go to multiple places or have multiple clicks. It's all an endless lesson file. It's just a basically, if you think of it as screenshots or cells, it's individual cells that are going to play throughout the lesson. The great thing is, though, once they see the lesson, they have access to that lesson throughout the semester. So if they need to go back and look at it, they're able to. If they want to review something, they're able to. It's not replacing Blackboard. The idea behind this software is that it'll improve our interaction with the students. And in the math courses, this is a huge thing because there is a disconnect sometimes with our online and hybrid offerings with communicating in an effective way the math concepts, but also at the same time trying to be concise. So this allows us to take a 30-minute lesson video, break it up into individual parts, say 10 minutes each, then have follow-ups for those 10-minute videos with questions. And the students can see the whole 30-minute video, but they can digest it in 10-minute chunks. So I know Screencast-O-Matic does that, or ScreenPal, whatever they're calling it now. But the thing that it allows us to do with Nearpod is I can implement my own stuff into it.
Rather than getting something kind of canned from a producer.
That's exactly right. So instead of it just being, hey, this is what it is, that you just push play, I can adapt and manipulate it to fit my course. And each instructor would have the ability to do that themselves. Let me give you, for instance, how I would use Nearpod. I'd create this lesson, and let's just go with a unit circle here. And so I would start by drawing a unit circle. Well, you know what? I know how to draw a unit circle. So I'm like, hey, guys, why don't you go ahead on your device and you draw your unit circle. And so me as the instructor, I have the ability to see all their devices on the screen. And so I can go, hey, there's a really good example. And I can show that to the entire class. I go, you see how they labeled everything? You see what they got here? This is perfect. I can also take an example that is not as great and say, hey, how can we improve on this? What's lacking here, you know, besides the fact that, you know, the circle may not be perfectly round, we can, as a group, see both good and bad examples. But instead of me just being on the board and just regurgitating information, I can now ask the students to provide some of that information. And you'll be surprised. If I ask them to come to the board, they're not going to do it. But if I'm on a device and all I have to do is draw a circle on my device or draw the line or whatever it may be, we all have a smartphone in our hand 90% of the time. They're able to connect. I'm able to see what they're doing on that device. and the collaboration is there, but really it's the student engagement that is the thing. So I don't want to sit in a class and sit there and take notes for an hour and a half. Students don't want to do that either. I'm just trying to use what they're using in a way to get the concept across.
So it's more relatable on how it's presented.
Yes. So if it's their cell phone in their hand, then let's let it be their cell phone in their hand. It's not going to require anything on the student other than the device they already have. So it's no extra added cost to them.
Well, thanks for coming to talk to me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
The foundation awarded cybersecurity instructor Mikhail Chambly a $2,000 grant to help purchase Raspberry Pi computers so it can give students more hands-on training. Mikhail, what is a Raspberry Pi?
Raspberry Pi is about the smallest real fully functioning computer you can get your hands on to. So it's, you know, think about the size of like a USB stick.
Fully functional, like CPU and everything that you can.
Right. So you can, one of the differences between buying a real Raspberry Pi, which is what we've got, and something called like a Pico, is that the Raspberry Pi does have the ability to put a full operating system on it. So in our case, we're going to put Linux on there so that we can use some of the more readily available open source hacking tools.
How are you going to use the computers for your students?
We were able to get little miniature full color LCD screens to go on them as well. And what this allows us to do is the students are able to hack and crack these without any concern for the more expensive, larger computers that the school has bought, you know, for actual regular everyday use. These can be quickly reformatted, basically, you know, if we need to. If somebody does something horrible, we can just, you know, reformat it and put on another distribution or another version of Linux and start over again. They're less expensive if we damage them by doing things that hacking people do.
In other words, you can put them through the ringer and it won't be as costly, I guess, if you were to do it in the lab that you have down there.
Absolutely.
It may seem obvious, but how does this help students as far as learning the material and learning these skills that you know they're going to need when they get out?
Well, you know, much like a physical sport, the students need to understand offense and defense to be able to be in the field. So we can't defend against an attacker if we don't understand how the attackers conduct the attacks. This allows us to act as the attacker or the red team and do the hacking. And we can put those tools on these Raspberry Pis and we can use them to hack into each other and other Raspberry Pis or even the virtual machines that we have on some of the servers. And it gives the students something that is, you know, less expensive to fix when we break it, like we've talked about, but it gives them something that's realistic. If I'm a hacker out in the field, I'm not carrying a laptop with me. That's too obvious. I'm going to have a USB-sized computer in my pocket that I can manipulate so that no one knows that I'm doing the hacking. Mm-hmm. We can do things like, if anyone watches Mr. Robot, they have an episode where they use something called a USB rubber ducky. A rubber ducky is a USB stick that's got a program on it that steals, when used properly, steals everything that's on the computer it's plugged into. It's more complicated than the TV makes it look, but you know, we can do those kind of things with these tools.
Polysomnography director Jordan Rusk received a $1,500 grant to purchase a board preparatory course and help students pass their certification exams. So tell me about your program.
So I am the program director of two of the allied health programs here at ACC, polysomnography and neurodiagnostic technology. And so this grant was for the polysomnography program, which is the study of sleep medicine. And so the students get an associate's degree when they're finished, and it's about 16 months long when they go through the program. And when they graduate, they can become a registered sleep technologist. Right.
So tell me a little bit about the grant.
So the grant is for a board prep course for the students in their last semester. And because sleep is pretty small, there's not a lot of extra educational materials out there. And so we found an online board prep course that would get them ready for their registry exam and kind of pulls everything together that they learned in the first semester of the program and reintroduces it again that last semester. So this grant will pay for a 6-month subscription for each student to have access to board prep materials, practice exams, and just get them ready for that board exam.
And so do they do anything like that right now at all?
No? They do. It's all just stuff I've kind of put together with them. And so this is good because it's another person. So it's another instructor they're learning from that may word things a little different, that may, you know, sink in a little bit better for them and just kind of pull everything they've learned into one area so that they can also access at home. And the way the semester works, they'll still have access to it about a month after they graduate, so they can keep that material fresh on their mind until they're ready to take their exam.
It seems self-evident, but like kind of how important is getting these licensure exams, you know, being out there in the workforce?
So in the state of Texas, they cannot work as a sleep tech unless they have this registry exam. So they've spent all this time in a program and going through a school. And so the kind of culmination of all that is to sit for that registry exam. And so we want them to pass on their first attempt because it is an expensive exam. It's $450. So we want them to be successful and pass on that first exam as soon as they can, so then they can go out and get a job. It's just giving the students extra support that they need in case they are feeling like, hey, there's a certain area I'm weak in and want to refresh my memory. This will give them that opportunity without having to dig through all of their stuff. It has little short videos, practice exams, quizzes. So,
and one of the things I've always kind of brought up whenever I talk about this program is that there's not a whole lot of them out there. So when people, if they want to get a certification on sleep studies, there's not a whole lot of places to go and get it.
No, so there's about 16 programs in the entire country and only two in the state of Texas. So it's very small, but the workforce is huge, especially in this Houston area with having the largest medical center. I mean, I get emails all the time for people looking for techs. So it's something that a lot of people don't know about, and there's just not a lot of even sleep techs out there. So it's a really good field to get into.
Anatomy and physiology instructor Brittany Buick received a $600 grant to help purchase equipment for the biotechnology certificate program. So you got this grant for some equipment. Kind of tell me what this equipment is and kind of what you plan to use it for.
So we are going to launch two biotechnology courses for continuing education in the fall. And this is going to prepare students for entry-level positions in biomanufacturing and medical device. With that being said, these students are going to be learning a lot of techniques like how to gown and degown for clean rooms, how to work in biosafety cabinets. So this grant's going to allow us to buy some of the PPE, the personal protective equipment for the clean rooms, and some of the hands-on tools that they'll need to learn as well.
And so what are these? Are they two courses or are they certificate programs?
They're going to be certificate programs.
Okay. What is certification for?
So this will allow them to apply to any number of companies that kind of fall under that biotech umbrella. So biotech's very, very broad, but this kind of gives them the skills that they're going to need to work in these facilities where sterility is really, really important. So whether they go to a company that does biomanufacturing, where they're making therapeutic agents to treat patients, or medical devices where they're manufacturing the equipment like catheters and tubing and that sort of thing.
And so this equipment that you guys are going to get, how is that going to factor into their training into this workforce?
So with this type of training, particularly gowning and degowning for clean rooms, there's a lot of consumables that go into that, as well as the smaller tools like micropipettes and serological pipettes. So this grant will allow us to purchase those tools and allow the students to learn how to accurately use them and dispense them, which is absolutely necessary for any of those entry-level positions.
Okay. And this program's new, like we've never had it before?
Correct.
All right. Well, thanks for coming to talk to me.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. To read about these stories and more, visit alvincollege.edu/news.